Whereas offences against property have of late increased in and near the metropolis, and the local establishments of nightly watch and nightly police having been found inadequate to the prevention and detection of crime, and whereas it is expedient to substitute a new and more efficient system of police in lieu of such...
Peeler by Patrick Carroll, Episode 5.
Oh, Mr. Peel, what have you done? Your police act so grand, sir. It will be the cause, I have no doubt, of killing Van Diemen's land, sir. London now, believe me, sir, is overstruck with queer codes who wish the police act and you were sent to Jimmy Squaretoes.
Stolen? This brooch stolen? Mr. Morley, you are either mistaken or you attempt a jest in extremely dubious taste.
Indeed not, ma'am. The brooch in question was until recently the possessed property of... whom, my lord?
Why, sir, I bought it in a public house from an Irishman of rather amusing rascality. Where he came by it, I do not know and did not inquire.
Indeed, my lord.
Oh, come, my lord, this won't do. I believe we are both aware that the brooch is the rightful property of Mrs. Abrahams of Ely Place.
Mrs. Abrahams? How can that be so?
And further, my lord, so far from buying jewellery from this amusing Irish rascal, you in fact sold to him divers other pieces, also the property of Mrs. Abraham.
Is this true, my lord?
Do you dare, sir, to accuse a gentleman of such transactions?
Is it true, Edward?
It is at all events impossible of any proof.
I fear your lordship is very amateurish in this enterprise. Both David Kern's defence and Screever Reed, the forger, will, if necessary, testify against you.
Why should they, sir?
For the identical reason that your lordship's servants were willing to perjure themselves against Martin Quinn. It was in their interest that they not risk your lordship's displeasure.
And why should those two villains be less loyal than my servants? They've certainly been well paid. Or do you pay them better?
Again, your lordship betrays himself as an infant in these matters. I do not pay either of them a farthing. However, they are aware that if I choose, I'm able to make their illicit activities impossible, or at least unprofitable.
Mr. Morley, should what I suspect be true, I shall be happy to bear witness against Lord Trowell myself, regardless of the consequences.
Have a care, madam. Any inconvenience visited upon me shall be repaid with interest.
Regardless of any consequences to myself, Mr. Morley.
Mrs. Gascoigne, in order to spare you the ordeal of a detailed interrogation, I will outline what I suspect to be the sequence of events which concerns us all here.
A highly entertaining prospect, Mr. Morley.
Having seen the letters forged by Screever Reed and addressed from his lordship to Mrs. Abrahams, I have deduced that Mrs. Abrahams visited this house on a number of occasions in connection with the services which you, ma'am, have informed me that you offered here to certain respectable ladies.
Quite correct, Mr. Morley.
In the course of these visits, I believe Mrs. Abrahams became acquainted with and enamoured of his lordship.
What a flame to such a moth, Mr. Morley. Would you not agree?
I may easily imagine that the surface glamour attaching to a gentleman of Lord Trawl's position might well have had an unsettling effect on a widowed lady of Mrs. Abrahams' age and temperament.
Indeed. It does not require so very great an effort of imagination after all, does it, Mr. Morley?
No, indeed, ma'am. The internal evidence of those letters leads me to the conviction that Lord Trowell represented himself as fully reciprocating Mrs. Abraham's amorous sentiments, and that, under that pretense, various sums of money were extracted from the lady.
Mr. Morley, you must be very careful in making accusations which cannot be substantiated.
Oh, believe me, I am, my lord. These sums were designated as loans which would aid his lordship through some trifling temporary difficulties. Difficulties which would be ended upon his lordship's attaining his 25th birthday, whereupon he would come into a large independent property and thus be at liberty to marry Mrs. Abrahams without reference to the wishes of his father, Lord Laverton.
A pretty scheme, was it not, Mr. Morley?
A pretty shameful and wicked method of bilking money from an unfortunately foolish woman, whose most grievous fault is of too easily bestowing her trust and affection upon an unworthy blackguard.
A fault, to my bitterest regret, upon which Mrs. Abrahams holds no monopoly.
Do not be a hypocrite, Amelia. Who instigated such a plan in the first instance?
I deny nothing. But I may easily perceive that I have been most foolishly blind to your lordship's refinements of the original scheme.
Shall I continue, ma'am?
By all means, Mr. Morley.
There would also have been, of course, Mrs. Abrahams' letters to his lordship. But I'm convinced they may have been destroyed.
By whom?
By the lady herself.
Why, sir, how would she have recovered her own letters to Lord Troll and... Unless... Ah, I begin to understand.
Yes, ma'am. His lordship or one of his creatures went to Mrs. Abrahams and, knowing that his own letters could be dismissed as forgeries, demanded a further price for not making her letters public. A course that must have irredeemably compromised the lady.
Prove it, sir, prove it, or I shall demand the satisfaction my honour requires. And do not be...
Still, my lord. A fool may see that Mr. Morley would thrash you senseless without troubling to remove his coat. Mr. Morley, can you provide proofs of what you say?
Sufficient to satisfy myself, ma'am. I know that the jewels reported as stolen from Mrs. Abraham's house were sold to Davy Kearns by a gentleman whose description would not be incredible if applied to his lordship.
But if the jewels were stolen, how did Lord Troll come by them? Surely even he does not stoop to housebreaking.
You may depend upon it, madam.
There was no robbery. A burglary was counterfeited to enable Mrs. Abrahams to account for, well, the loss of her jewellery. I expect the business was executed by Screever Reed. It bears his hallmark.
I cannot doubt it, Mr. Morley.
The supposedly stolen property was then turned over to his lordship in return for Mrs. Abraham's letters to him.
So, my lord, this is how I am used. Everything that has passed between us has, after all, so little weight with you.
Not at all, my dear Amelia. I have improved.
You have cheated and deceived me. I have been made a fool of.
Oh, tush, madam. Why, have you not that extremely valuable cameo brooch to compensate you for... Amelia.
That is my opinion of such compensation, sir. I repeat, Mr. Morley, you may depend upon my full cooperation in any proceeding which will bring his lordship's infamous villainy home to him.
Hold, madam. Do not forget that I am in a position to testify as to what is the actual purpose of this establishment. No doubt you feel justly that you have no reputation to lose, but procuring and brothel keeping are still punishable by imprisonment or even transportation. Am I not correct, Mr. Morley?
Quite correct, my lord.
I tell you, I do not care what happens to me, if only I am revenged upon you!
I think, madam, that upon due reflection, you will agree with me that the time has come for us to simply go our separate ways, with neither doing or saying anything which might discommode the other.
I am so far in agreement with your lordship. However, before we all go our separate ways, you will oblige me by signing a document which I prepared.
Sign? Indeed, I shall sign nothing, sir.
You will, my lord. If you do not, the fashionable intelligence will shortly be aware that a certain young nobleman is to appear before the bar of the House of Lords upon charges of robbery, forgery, blackmail, and perjury. A process, I dare say, your lordship will find infinitely more discommoding than the one which I propose.
What is this document?
You may, of course, read it. You will find it to be a full account of what has concerned us here today. With such an attested paper in my possession, I may be able to undo some of the mischief that has already been perpetrated. I shall also be in a position to permit your lordship a space of time to make arrangements for a discreet withdrawal from the limelight of town life and society. The season upon the continent may possibly recommend itself.
Upon my soul, sir, this is not to be borne. The paper, if you please, sir.
A very little portion of justice, considering his lordship's conduct, but better than no justice at all.
Yes, I shall require you to sign the document as well, madam.
I assure you, sir, I shall do no such thing.
I think you will, madam.
Well, when his lordship is quite finished.
Don't be fretty, young man. You may sit down by a crippled man and come to no harm yourself.
Oh, I will sit a while, thank you, sir.
Tired out, are you, then?
A little, yeah.
Why, only being in this place is drudgery enough. If you're so soft as to work when there's none to make you work, well, you will be tired.
And have you seen me working?
I have. Well, the jail peeler's made a little cooperage in his own room.
I find it better than being idle.
Not so good as being free. Not so good as that, eh?
No, not so good as that.
Look up above that dirty wall. Look at that sky. With them cushioning clouds in the sun we've hardly seen these 3 months past. Why, what would you do on such a day?
Well, if I had my liberty, do you mean?
Oh, your liberty. And the use of all your limbs.
Yeah. Why, I think
I know what I'd do. I'd walk out in the fields beyond the ivy barn, I take along the new river towards Hornsey Wood, and I drop a hook in the water, and lie on a bank and care no more if I caught a fish than if I caught a fish. And I should go to the old conduit house and drink strong ale and eat oysters and pie. I should be dull.
Well, what man would be?
Why, the man who stays where he needn't.
Really? I do not understand you, Mr...
My name's Wallace. Clamber Wallace, they call me. Haven't you ever heard that name?
Well, no, not that I recall. No.
Then you won't know how I come to be so crippled and maimed. Hey, you're a tradesman, aren't you? A cooper?
Well,
I was put to a trade once, years ago. I was a little clergyman.
Oh, a chimney sweep, you mean?
Oh, a sweeps boy. And that's smart. Why, squirrels was nothing to me. I one time ran away from my master by going up a sugar refinery chimney and swarming 40 feet sheer down the outside. Baby wall all the way, and I ran 2 miles before I was missed.
When I was a parish boy, the board thought to put me out to a sweep, but I was too big, yeah, even then. So they sent me for a soldier instead.
Comes the same in the end. Killed a man for another's benefit.
Oh, is that how...
Oh, what, have a chimney? Not I. But it comes of being a sweeps boy all the same. You've heard what some masters does with their boys to make them pay better.
Well, I've known boys to be lent for a price to housebreakers.
The very thing. Yeah. I couldn't help it. It was steal, be whipped, or starve. I stole. Hey. Ever been in Newgate, Peter?
Never. Well, not...
I've been. Oh, I've been in Newgate, waiting for me interview with Jack Ketch. Mm. Do you know how I come to steal me topside?
A pardon?
Oh, not me. I escaped.
From Newgate? Well, boy, I thought no one had ever escaped.
Oh, no, just me. I'm the only one. Though I lost an arm, half a leg and done to me face what you can see has been done, they didn't catch me again for 6 years. Then they pardoned me. Good on them, weren't it? Not to anger cripple.
Yeah, but how? Yeah, even from the outside.
Climbing clambered. What do I come by the name?
Oh, those walls are 50 feet at least, with every kind of spiking, yeah, all round the top.
But there's one corner with his assistant. Why, I got myself wedged, feet in back, in the angle. I just inched up. I fell back down twice, but I kicked behind a patch of sky above, like I'd done up the chimneys. And I got to the top at last.
Yeah, but the spikes.
They did for me. Didn't keep me in, but... They took the toll to see me missing now.
And after all of that, you find yourself here?
Yeah, I'm here. Why not? Inside or outside, there's nothing for me but begging. Here, if the begging's a sin, there's still a roof. Even if it's only on the poor side.
And it would be hard to escape now.
I'd escape none of it. Even as I am, I could scarce out of here easy as a cat through a cobweb. And, well, if I was young and old like you...
Yeah, I suppose it's not the fastest prison a man ever built.
If you was to choose, you could be out of the arms grill window, down the pool, and bound for New York before the lock had drunk his tea.
It's easy, is that?
Easier.
To one who has been long in city pent, 'tis very sweet to look into the fair and open face of heaven, to breathe a prayer full in the smile of the blue firmament. Who is more happy? Who is it? Oh, bless us. Look at your face. What's he been doing to you? He continues my moral improvement. Is there any news? Has Mr. Lytton called?
He has not, miss. I'm sure he's had your letter, but he's not been here.
I have written another. You must see that it reaches him.
I'll try, miss. Is there nothing else I may do to help you?
I must go quickly. There's no one else to answer the door. Yes, of course. But first, take this.
Yes, miss. Mr. Lytton. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Gregory. Is your master at home?
Why, he is,
sir. It is vital that I speak with him.
Yes, sir. Walk in. Mr. Staples, sir. Wake up.
What the blazes do you want here, curate?
If Mrs. Gregory will excuse her...
Yes, back to your kitchen. And I shall want another bottle of spirits presently, Mrs. G.
Yes, Mr. Staples.
Now, curate, what brings you here? You haven't been to my house in a long while now. mine. That's no distress to me.
I have recently received a most shocking communication from Miss Staples.
What? Has that jade been smuggling letters out of this house?
I see that what I feared is true.
Oh, get the blood out of her for it. And that cag, maggotish old scarecrow of a housekeeper for helping her. She won't cook any more meals here.
Sir, you have made a prisoner of your daughter in her own house.
My own house, curate. My own house.
I will not suffer that innocent creature to be used in such a manner.
Innocent creature, be damned, shameless, undutiful slut.
May God forgive me for saying so, but I thank heaven that your unfortunate wife is dead, that she is spared this.
You don't dare to speak of my wife. If I ever hear the veriest whisper of my wife on your lips, I shall break your head, cloth or no cloth. No, get out of my house before I break it anyway.
I warn you, John Staples, the vicar shall hear of this, and the other vestrymen.
The Archbishop may hear of it, for all of me. Oh. Now, are you going?
Oh. No. Don't you dare put a hand
out of that door directly, or by the eternal, I'll knock you down the steps.
What? Take my...
And you may tell the vicar and the vestrymen, or serve them the same if they try to come between me and my family.
Break him. Damn all intolerable beast. If he's not heard the last of it, I swear I...
Here, sir.
What do you want with me, boy?
The old woman below, sir, in that there house. She forced this up from the eyrie. Told me to give it to the whip and jailer when we come out.
Well, did she say anything else?
No, just that, to give you the letter.
Oh, why, thank you, my lad. Here, do not go wanting for your supper.
Oh, thank you, sir. I shall.
Now, here's a most extraordinary communication.
I beg your pardon, Colonel?
We have a letter from Mr. Morley.
And what concerns the great detective today?
Well, he requests that one or another, or preferably both of us, wait upon him at the office of Mr. Rowe, Chief Magistrate at Marlborough Street, at 9:30 this evening.
What possible purpose can he have in making such a request?
He pleads that the matter is of such delicacy and the need for confidentiality so acute as to prevent his being more particular in a letter. However, he does hint that the matter bears upon the subject of his previous interview with his office.
Constable Quinn.
Surely. Well, for my part, I shall certainly attend Mr. Rowe's office.
Despite that gentleman's undisguised antipathy to our police and ourselves?
Yes, despite that. I feel obliged to do anything which might conceivably aid Constable Quinn, yes.
Be assured, Colonel, you may depend upon my company and support.
Thank you, my friend. The fate of a solitary constable may appear to some a trivial matter, but I cannot regard any unredressed injustice in that light.
Yes?
Kindly inform Lord Trowell that Mr. Reed has called. I wish you to speak with him on a matter of great importance.
His lordship is not at home at the present moment.
Ain't he? And when might I expect to find him at home?
I could not undertake to say. His lordship departed for Dover within the past hour.
What?
Having expressed his intention of crossing to Calais by the first available packet.
But Calais? He can't have left me, sir. It can't mean that I...
Pardon me, Lord Loverton. This letter has been delivered by messenger from the magistrate's office at Marlborough Street. The messenger was at pains to stress its urgency, my lord.
Thanks, Hill Porter.
My lord, I trust that you will excuse me the liberty of addressing you with the most urgent request that your lordship find it convenient to call to my office here at Marlborough Street tonight at 9:30. I would not think of intruding upon your lordship's time and condescension were I not in possession of intelligence of a most pressing and disturbing nature.
And wouldn't you like to escape and go off to America?
Oh, I'm content enough here. I don't mean here, but here in England. Besides, it would have been a long sea voyage and ships and I don't agree too well. At least we didn't when I was young.
Oh, I dream of it sometimes. Not of America itself. Not of them horrible wild animals and beastly red heathens, I mean. But of leaving all my life behind.
And why don't you?
How could I? Even if I was ever to get out of this place, how would I pay the passage and keep myself?
Well, aren't there folk, societies and such like, that help people wanting to emigrate?
Oh, them. I know them, with their black gowns and long faces like grim death.
No, they mean well, surely.
They take our Lord as a purge for themselves and use him as a scourge for the backs of the likes of me. I am what I am, and I ain't proud of it. But I'll have some gaiety out of this life, or I shan't have no life at all.
So you should, but don't you think...
Good evening, Martin.
Why, Mr. Lytton, have you braved the dungeons again? Well, it's noble in you. Are you acquainted with Mr.
Yes. Yes, I encountered the young woman on my previous visit.
Come, Reverence. You can't catch a pox just a-looking.
Really? Martin, I must speak with you privately. I have a letter for you from... A letter I'm sure you would rather read when not in company.
A letter? But who writes to me in such a place?
Miss Staples.
Who is Miss Staples?
Miss Staples is the daughter of my former master.
And what are you to her that she should write to you in a prison?
Why, Florrie, Miss Staples and I had hoped at one time to marry.
To... Why? Well, I'm happy to hear that. I had thought that one time that you were, not like... Well, that you didn't have a man's natural feelings towards women. But now, I'm truly delighted... Goodbye, Martin.
I'm sure we shall see each other again, Flora. You are almost always welcome here.
Martin, I do not know how you can tolerate the company of such a creature.
No, I don't expect you to. May I see Maria's letter, and is there any other news?
I called upon John Staples today. Mm-hmm.
And how does he prosper?
He is a drunken brute. He treated me abominably.
Well, did you particularly upset him, or was he simply acting in his usual way?
I went to remonstrate with him over his treatment of his daughter. He was... But perhaps you had better read Miss Staples' letter. It no doubt bears upon the subject.
Yes, the letter.
My dearest Martin, it has become clear to me in my hours of solitude that existence without my heart's desire is not to be borne. And I intend, despite anything which anyone may say or do, to be united with you. I have set upon one infallible way of escaping my father's house and influence, and having followed that way, it will be, for me at least, a very short while until I am joined for all eternity with he who is already the husband of my soul. Until that hour... I am, believe me, your most sanguine and loving Maria.
Lord Laverton to see you, Mr. Rowe.
Mr. Rowe, I have received your Mr. Rowe, I assume that you desired a confidential interview. Who are these other gentlemen?
My apologies, my lord. Allow me to make you acquainted with Colonel Rowan.
Your servant, my lord.
Mr. Mayne.
Honoured, my lord.
And Mr. Morley.
Mr. Morley of Bow Street.
Also your servant, my lord.
I confess myself to be at a loss to comprehend what my presence might possibly add to such a distinguished assemblage.
Mr. Morley, as it is by your request that we're gathered here, perhaps you'll be good enough to explain your purpose.
Most certainly, Mr. Rowe. Lord Laverton, I must take the liberty of informing you that your son and heir is an ignoble scoundrel.
How dare you, sir? My son may have his faults.
An ignoble scoundrel, my lord, utterly unworthy of his father's affection and patronage. If Lord Troll were to be presented with the alternatives as having the contents of this document made broadcast, or using a pistol to make an end of himself, he would, if he retained a scintilla of honourable feeling, choose the pistol.
You're very dramatic, Mr. Morley.
The circumstances appear to me to warrant such emphasis, Colonel Rowan. We are, after all, concerned first and foremost with ameliorating the black injustice presently being suffered by Constable Martin Quinn.
Quinn? You mean the constable who appeared before me last... what has he to do with this business?
Directly, very little. Indirectly, everything.
Pray proceed, Mr. Morley. I assure you that you have at least my full attention.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Rowe. As you have observed, Constable Quinn appeared before you some months ago and was found against as a direct result of the perjured testimony of Lord Troll and his servants.
How do you establish that remarkable assertion, Mr. Morley?
I established it by adducing a signed deposition to the effect. And if any of you gentlemen doubt it, Read this document and note the signatures at the bottom, one of which I am sure will be familiar to Lord Laverton at least.
How do we know this paper is genuine? Or by what means it was acquired? It may, for all we know...
Peace, Mr. Rowe. Yes. I perceive that there is no profit in pretense.
My lord?
Gentlemen, I am most abjectly ashamed to admit that Mr. Rowe and myself have been aware of my son's perjury for some days past. What? He admitted, nay, boasted of it.
What? Do you mean to say, Mr. Rowe, that being cognizant of these perjuries, you have allowed Martin Quinn to remain in his present state?
Well, what would you have me do, Mr. Maine? Oh, come, sir, you're a lawyer, a gentleman conversant with courts and their proceedings. Gentlemen, was I to undermine the public confidence in our British justice by trumpeting an entirely understandable error committed in an entirely unimportant case?
Unimportant case?
Yes.
Upon my soul, sir, you're exceedingly generous with another man's suffering and loss of liberty.
Be that as it may, Colonel, what would you have me do?
If you will allow me, Mr. Rowe, I believe I may suggest...
Mr. Morley, do you vouch for the entire accuracy of this statement signed by my son? To this infamous business of forgery and blackmail...
For your own sake, my lord, I'm deeply grieved to say that I must.
If that is the case, from this day I no longer know my son. He is disinherited from this moment.
Oh, well, that is a matter for your lordship. It is Martin Quinn who concerns me.
Yes, Mr. Morley, my colleague and I are also primarily interested in what may be done for Constable Quinn's relief.
And release. It is undoubtedly most regrettable, but I do not see how what has been done can be undone.
Do you not, Mr. Rowe? Ah, well, I think I may see a way clear. Lord Laverton.
Sir?
It is true, is it not, that the present ministry of Lord Grey, of which you are so prominent a supporter, is shortly to introduce a measure for comprehensive parliamentary reform.
That is true, sir.
I cannot doubt that should the document you hold in your hand become public, the prospects for the passage of any reform measure sponsored by your lordship's party would not be enhanced.
Surely, gentlemen, our entire party cannot be impeached by a scandal attaching solely to his lordship's son.
What is it precisely that you propose, Mr. Morley?
I propose, Colonel, to entrust that document to yourself and Mr. Maine. Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, if a method can be devised whereby Constable Quinn's liabilities might be discharged and his professional character vindicated, then I am sure that the commissioners will be entirely willing to exercise their own discretion when considering whether to bring the document to the attention of the Lord Chancellor.
The Lord Chancellor!
Or in advising Constable Quinn as to the wisdom of its use, should he be inclined to bring a private action against Lord Troll.
Well, indeed, Mr. Morley, I'm sure that Mr. Maine and I desire only that justice be done to Constable Quinn. Mm. We are in no wise anxious for the unnecessary embarrassment of innocent parties.
One would expect no less of you and your distinguished colleague, Colonel. My lord, Mr. Rowe, you will perhaps wish to consider the matter privately?
Yes, Mr. Morley. If you and the commissioners will be so kind as to excuse us. In parting, I may assure you of my opinion that the course you tacitly suggest is entirely practicable insofar as I may make it so.
I am happy to hear you say so, my lord. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, good evening. Good evening. Gentlemen.
Come, Mr. Morley, will you do me the honour of returning to Whitehall Place and joining Mr. Maine and myself in a little light supper?
Delighted, Colonel Rowan. I'm honoured and delighted.
That was episode 5 of Peeler by Patrick Carroll, with Mick Ford as Martin Quinn, James Booth as Jeremiah Morley, Richard E. Grant as Lord Troll, Elizabeth Bell as Mrs. Gascoigne, and Joanna Myers as Mariah Staples. Peter Jeffrey was Colonel Rowan, and Killian McKenna, Richard Maine. John Staples was played by Ian Lindsay, the Reverend Lytton by Timothy Carlton, Florrie by Susan Sheridan, and Frederick Rowe, Timothy Bateson. Other parts were played by Norman Jones, Elizabeth Kelly, James Green, and Fraser Carr. The singer was Martin Carthy. Peeler was directed by Janet Whittaker. For Mr. Peel, new watchmen will be far too strong to fear you.